у нас был все-таки один вопрос. Александр, давайте начнем с вас.
First, let me thank you for this interesting presentation. I myself study Husserl, and there were really interesting thoughts there. One of them being, you said that Husserl transforms the Cartesian ego cogito into we think. On which it's really complicated. Sorry. Might it be that the transcendental ego of Husserl is a we cogito, and that this transcendental ego is actually not subjective but intersubjective, and going further with Merleau-Ponty, might it be that it is actually already underway before this Durchbruch to transcendental ego in some kind of intercorporeality? This was my question. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'll just comment on Igor's translation problem. This is a big problem in the English translation of Husserl because, for example, there is no English word to describe Bewusstheit of Natur, which is a term that is used also by Husserl. So Bewusstsein, Bewusstheit, certainly the English language, or not just the English language, but I have no way of conceiving the difference between those two terms. And the French struggle as well, I recall that with Sartre and Merleau-Ponty, they often speak about conscience de soi, but they dropped the de and said conscience soi to make sure there is no possession of self. You know, they drop the possessive pronoun. So each language struggles to explicate this notion of some kind of self-awareness that does not objectify the self. That's the first thing. And Husserl has many different terminologies also. And Husserl also, in many manuscripts that have recently been published, distinguishes between consciousness, Bewusstsein, and Aufmerksamkeit, attention. Attention is part of consciousness, but not the whole of consciousness. He talks about Aufmerksamkeit as a very difficult concept. It's for him a kind of awareness, an awareness that can move within our broader consciousness of the act. So there's some kind of distinction between Aufmerksamkeit and Bewusstsein. So now, the question of the transcendental ego, which you very rightly raise, because the late Husserl moves more and more to the recognition that we are only egos within a community of intersubject community. What he later called, this is a text I have here, it towards the end of my talk, I didn't use it, the community of monads. Part of the problem is that Husserl, in the Cartesian Meditations, uses the language of Leibniz's monadology to describe these interconnection between between consciousnesses. And he says that, unlike Leibniz, the monads have windows. That is, the streams of subjectivity interpenetrate. So he writes here, and look at the German, it's very complicated. Here we have a whole new concept of relying on each other, being dependent on one another, being interconnected with one another. Aufeinander angewiesen, voreinander abhängen sein, miteinander verbunden sein. And all of this leading to a more general kind of Miteinander sein or coexistence. So he really struggles with this idea of an Ineinander sein of consciousness, and a genuine intersubjectivity. Sometimes he uses the word Geist, a word of Gemeingeist, communal spirit. But the difference between Husserl and Merleau-Ponty here is that there was an intermediary, Eugen Fink. And Fink proposed that the transcendental ego, that before it emerges, there is something he calls the vor-ich, or the pre-ego, which for him is a kind of anonymous and possibly plural source of the transcendental ego, an anonymous one, das Man, even. And that notion is developed very much by Fink in the sixth Cartesian meditation. And that had a strong influence on Merleau-Ponty. So Merleau-Ponty moved to the idea that the only kind of transcendental ego is, an intersubjective plurality of egos cooperating together, something like he says here. As you see here, he even has the notion of, you can see it there, each monad is not only for itself, but for all the other monads. So the für sich sein is füreinander sein also. And he also says, really interesting, the last sentence there, that this being with one another is not just a mirroring of the other or a representing of the other, but is a real common living. So there is this, you were right, there is something like a vir, cogitamus, or we think at the heart of the cogito. At the same time, there are some passages in the Crisis where he says that the only sense we can make of that is to think of me and as an ego, and the possible transformations of myself that I can do in some kind of what he calls modalization of self. So it's very complicated. Husserl really retains a transcendental ego, whereas I think that you lose that and it becomes more something like Dasein or the collective intersubjectivity in Heidegger and Merleau-Ponty. So there's a real shift. But Husserl retained a Fichtean notion of the ego, I think.
Саша, краткое резюме того, что вы спросили, и краткое резюме того, что ответил профессор Муран. А вы, коллеги...
Постараюсь. Я спросил, что... Так, сущность моего вопроса заключалась в следующем. Мне интересно вот, что профессор упомянул, что есть некоторые... трансформация картезианского эго-когито у Гуссерля, и эта трансформация не я мыслю, а мы мыслим. Вопрос был такой, можно ли говорить о том, что трансцендентальное эго у Гуссерля это коллективное нечто, интерсубъективное? И можно ли пойти еще дальше вместе с Мерлопонти и сказать о том, что есть некоторая интертелесность, которая является основой этого интерсубъективного эго, осознаваемая на определенном уровне. А ответ вот с этим посложнее. С одной стороны,
Саша, очень кратко,
это так, Гуссерль действительно говорит о «мы мыслим», и в более поздних работах он склоняется к такой интерпретации, к тому, что я, оно интерсубъективно по той причине, что нам необходим другой или понимание другого для того, чтобы обладать самосознанием. Дальше он также говорит о том, что монады, и он в поздних работах прибегает к этому лейбницевскому термину. Монада, в отличие от концепции Лейбница, обладает окнами, и это значит, что монада одновременно является и я, и некой интерсубъективной сущностью. Но, в общем-то, этот вопрос очень сложный и запутанный. Спасибо.
Давайте я задам на русском, и Андрей тогда переведет. Значит, у меня даже два вопроса. Первый вопрос, скорее уточняющий. Насколько я понимаю, ожидания относятся к первому, дорефлексивному уровню. И сразу второй вопрос, который взаимосвязан. Человеческие представления о будущем, какую они роль? Я так понимаю, что они как раз относятся точно к уже рефлексивному уровню. Какую они роль играют в сознании? И менялись вот здесь представления Гуссерля по мере развития его творчества?
Okay, thank you. But just to call attention to a text that would suit you, where he says here that jede Monad konkret genommen Substanz, aber nur relative Konkretion, sie ist, was sie ist, nur als Socius einer Sozialität, als Gemeinschaftslied in einer Totalgemeinschaft. So each ego is, you know, just what it is, only relatively within a community of egos. So that puts priority on intersubjectivity. However, there are other passages that say the opposite in Husserl. But this question of expectation and in Husserl, first of all, there are again many levels to that. At the very lowest level, in time consciousness, Husserl uses the term protension, which for him is the fact that every now is already moving towards the future. So he introduces this term horizon, to say that there is a kind of open horizon of futurity at any moment in my experience. I have the sense that it will continue. When he gives always the example of listening to music. You know, you don't just hear this note, but you are waiting for the next one. Now, that is already pre-reflective. That is passive for Husserl. It belongs to the passive flow of my experience that it has this openness, intentioning towards the future. Now, there is an expectation that will continue to be more or less the same. Even in perception, and Husserl talks about this, when I move my eyes, I'm expecting a continuity of the field of vision. Only in dreams can I have a big break. But so the Husserl talks about dream consciousness as having a different kind of possibility than regular consciousness. But this idea that there is openness, but also a certain continuity, what he calls a concordance, that each part of my experience harmonizes with the next bit. That's part of my experience, that's part of consciousness. So then, on the basis of that, we can build a more reflective expectation. You know, we can, as we do, invent something like the rest of my life. You know, I imagine the rest of my life, or even what I will do tomorrow. And that is a much more explicit form of concretization of possibilities within this open future. But the open future is given first, pre-reflectively.
Thank you very much. Понятно все? Ну, хорошо. Так, вопрос еще у Андрея. У Андрея и потом у Георгия. Так, пожалуйста, Георгий.
This sphere of transcendental subjectivity through the way of abstractive reflection, but don't you see here a paradox that that transcendental subjectivity for Husserl is a sphere of Konkretion, Konkretheit. How could we reconcile the abstractive method and the Konkretheit that we should achieve?
Yes, thank you. A difficult question. But the reason I emphasize the epoché is that really this distinguishes Husserl from many phenomenologists after him who do not think the epoché is essential to coming to self-awareness or self-consciousness. For Husserl, it's essential. Moreover, the epoché for Husserl is a breakthrough of humanity. It's a discovery of humanity. It makes possible a new transcendental life. Yes, you're right that perhaps we shouldn't think of it as merely abstraction. It belongs, Husserl in the ideas one describes this epoché as non-position-taking, as an abstention from position-taking. That means we perhaps learn not just to act on instinct, that we learn to withdraw, to consider all of the motivations that are involved in what we are doing. So it's not that we are stopping from acting, but we become much more self-reflectively aware of the reasons why we are acting. So I think that's how Husserl sees it. In fact, Husserl uses many of the languages that later Habermas uses about the idea of a kind of rational community, where we have a full consideration of all of the alternatives and all of the reasons for our acting. And this for him is the higher humanity. But it's, of course it's concrete, but it is really what Habermas talks about in his book Towards a Rational Society. It's the idea of a completely rational society where we have brought to consciousness all of the motivations which in natural life we just erleben, we just live through.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your exciting lecture, and I should apologize for my English. Deutsch is that was better.
Sie können mein auf Deutsch.
I have two or three questions. How is it possible an epoché concerning the world as a horizon? How is it possible an epoché concerning the world as a horizon, as a whole? This is my first erste Frage, meine erste Frage.
Ja. Das verstehe ich. So kann ich das Frage antworten erstmal. I'll speak in English, if okay, it's okay. Yes, the question is how can we suspend or bracket the horizon of the world? And this is exactly the question that Merleau-Ponty asks in the Phenomenology of Perception when he says that all we learn from the reduction is the impossibility of completing it. Yeah. But I think Husserl is not trying to bracket or suspend the world, the horizon of the world. In fact, the opposite. He wants to bring the horizon of the world into awareness. Normally we're not aware of the horizon of the world. What he wants to do is to take away just one aspect. This is what he calls the Seinsglaube. Only the belief in being, in the actuality of existence. In other words, Husserl thinks perhaps that too much emphasis on actuality and existence clouds us or prevents us from seeing the complexity of horizons understood as possibilities, as potentialities, as background meanings which are not directly in view in our intentional act. So we don't bracket the world, but only the Seinsglaube in the world.
Thank you. And my second question.
Алексей, давай, может быть, по очереди, потому
что... Sorry.
Okay, no
problem. Коллеги, у нас предпочтение дается на вопросы в первую очередь тем, кто не сидит в президиуме. И в первую очередь тем, кто наиболее молод, студенты, аспиранты. После этого все остальные. Пожалуйста.
Так, теперь включено. Насколько я понимаю, о уровнях эго. То есть у нас есть реальное эго, в которое входят привычки, чувства, рефлексии. И у нас есть трансцендентальное эго. И чтобы достичь трансцендентального эго, мы применяем процедуру эпохе. То есть это возможно одновременно только за счет самоидентификации, и с другой стороны мы выходим на проблему интерсубъективности. И получается, что трансцендентальное эго у нас универсально. А в таком случае, мне кажется, есть проблема нормативности. То есть, ну, как бы нормы трансцендентального эго. И вот вопрос в том, что эта нормативность, она относится к процедурам сознания. То есть то, что у всех общая именно процедура как бы сознания, ну, центр рефлексии. Или, может быть, есть какой-то другой содержательный, универсальный смысл трансцендентального эго?
Yeah, no, thank you. That's a very, again, these are very difficult questions. But thank you. You are right that the passage from the real ego to the transcendental ego comes through the epoche. And Husserl says that when this happens, we move from being the individual human being to understand, if you like, the pure, what he calls pure life of the ego, das reine Ich. And that's very similar to Kant. And there is no doubt that Husserl thinks that there is some move from the particular to the universal. We are learning, he even says it in the Cartesian Meditations, that in the ego cogito, I come to realize just not just myself, but what a self is, the essence of self, the eidos self. Mm-hmm. So I move from the individual experience of my own ego to know in general or universally what ego as such is or what a self as such is. And clearly, that has normative implications. And Husserl, in his Ethics, develops something like Kant, but he disagrees with Kant of the categorical imperative. He thinks that human beings are driven by interests, so that we have to universalize relative to the interests that we have. But he does think that just like this capacity for self-bracketing, the capacity to see oneself as another, to see oneself in the role of the other, that is really the basis for ethics. And actually, it's this side of Husserl. You can go in two directions, in the direction of Kant and like Habermas, in the idea of a universal community, a speech community where each person recognizes the other, or you can go in the direction of Levinas, where you can see that once you become aware of yourself and of the self of the other, you must give precedence to the other. So there's in Husserlian phenomenology does not specify which kind of universalization we do. So I think that's probably the answer.
Thank you.
Значит, вы совершенно правы в том, что переход от реального эго к трансцендентальному через ЭПХ происходит. И здесь Гуссель выступает как кантианец, как вот это чистое эго, reinen Ich. Однако также Гуссель себя сам описывает как картезианца, который через эго когито обнаруживает, что такое самость, self, само по себе. И, конечно, вот это обнаружение ведет к нормативным следствиям, импликациям. Потому что в каждом этой самости существует способность видеть себя как другого, и поэтому, и что является основанием для этического, для нормативного. Да, одновременно это не Гуссель здесь против кантовского категорического императива, потому как для него люди движимы привычками, эмоциями и обычаями. Из такой позиции по относительно нормативности этики следует два различных варианта, которые один из них развивался Хабермасом, другой Левинасом. Хабермасом через социальность и Левинасом через этику там, себя и так далее.
Коллеги, у нас еще есть три вопроса у Алексея, один у Андрея, но в первую очередь еще раз мы даем возможность студентам-аспирантам задать все вопросы. Пожалуйста. Есть ли еще какие-то? Если вопросов нет, то мы, может быть, сейчас перешли бы к нашей второй части, потому что по тому графику, какой мы себе наметили, и с уважения к переводчику, переводчик задает вопрос, и после этого, да, да.
Always like, struggled with this notion of historicity of ego in late Husserl, because Husserl always described himself like, in Cartesian meditations as Cartesian, but still, if you can describe historicity of ego as biography,
yes,
which in a way can be like attributed to the memory. And from that you can the memory is by itself the main problem or answer of Locke to the problem of personal identity. Mm. So like being Cartesian, Husserl like late in his late period, he's more working more towards the Lockean views.
I don't agree. Actually, this is the subject of my talk tomorrow.
All right.
So we can give an advertisement for the talk tomorrow. But Husserl says in Ideas and in Cartesian Meditations that the ego lives its life historically or becomes historical. And this is not just memory, but actually much more like what you find in Charles Taylor and in these other people who talk about a narrative conception of the self. That, in other words, Husserl says this, I mentioned this yesterday when I was talking about Husserl's conception of tradition, where we identify the people that are important for us. Die Dichtung der Geschichte, this poetic retrieval of history. So I can myself decide that Locke is more important than Kant for me, you know. Similarly, I can identify with aspects of my past and embrace them. You know, in English we can say, I wasn't myself yesterday. I wasn't myself when I did that. I mean, that seems, you know, that's a paradox because you are always yourself. So but the point is, you are distancing yourself from this activity. You can, even to the point where you don't remember it was you at all, you can deny it. So it's not memory, it's this idea that Husserl has of self-identification with something that was in the past. And also, we tell a story, you know. This that moment was important for me because now I'm a philosopher or whatever. You know, it's biography, but based on narrative rather than memory. And narrative is much more fiction. So we don't have to be. It's not what we remember, but who we think. You know, this is more like Freud in a way. It's who we think we are, who we imagine. You know, you are who you think you are, who you imagine yourself to be. You know this joke. I'm really an actor, and the answer is, oh, which restaurant? Yeah, so in other words, people think they're an actor, but they're working in a restaurant. So this is so Husserl has this idea that your self life is woven, is made up not just of your actualities and possibilities, but also of the cancelled possibilities, things you could have been, but now it's not possible. You know, I could have learned music. I could have been, an actor, something like that.
Андрей, уточняющих вопросов задавать больше нельзя. А нужно кратко перевести, сделать краткое резюме.
Ну, конечно, нет. Ответ, конечно, нет. Согласиться здесь нельзя.
А ты не перевел вопрос?
Историчная стегу, когда Гуссель позднее описывает, он как бы себя описывает в картезианских терминах. Что он картезианец, но вот историчность, она связана с биографией, там тоже такие выражения, да. Ну, у меня такая идея была, можно ли сказать, что биография связана с памятью, а память, это же один центральный ответ на локовскую проблему личного тождества личности, и тогда Гуссель, получается, работает не в картезианских терминах, а в лакеанских. Ну и ответ такой, что вот на уровне биографии все правильно, а когда переходим на память, уже нет, потому что это эго проживает жизнь исторически в смысле, в терминах, как говорил Чарльз Тейлор, вот это вот примерно как у Чарльза Тейлора есть такое нарративное понятие себя, то есть когда сам, для того, чтобы быть самостью, это то, что мы сами, как себя мы сами описываем. Вот, здесь важны другие понятия, не память, а традиция, даже поэтический выбор самоописания. Вот, и в том смысле, что человек, когда, допустим, можно сказать, что вчера я был не был самим собой, не в себе, вот, а для, это возможно, это нормально для Гуссерля, да, но это было бы неправильно для локовского, лакеанского взгляда, поэтому, конечно, нельзя сделать такой вывод о позднем Гуссерле.